I have to be the strong one now because George is gone.
George Floyd's brother challenges Congress to stop the pain. This is Thursday, the 11th of June, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. Also coming your way, protests across the country have put more pressure on the man who will face off against Donald Trump to choose from a narrowed list of running mates. We will check in with Hong Kong to see what happened the day after another mass protest there, and North Korea has threatened to totally sever communications with South Korea. It is all on today's VOA Asia. Testifying on Capitol Hill that his brother's death should not be in vain, Felonese Floyd testified Wednesday at a House hearing on proposed changes to police practices and accountability. He asked lawmakers to make certain his big brother is not another name on a growing list of those killed during interactions with police.
I'm here to ask you to make it stop. Stop the pain. Stop us from being tired. George called for help. And he was ignored. Please listen to the call I'm making to you now, to the calls of our family and the calls ringing out the streets across the world. People of all backgrounds, genders, and races have come together to demand change. Honor them, honor George, and make the necessary changes that make law enforcement the solution and not the problem.
Floyd says he hopes his brother's death changes the world for the better. George Floyd's death in police custody in Minneapolis has sparked worldwide protest and calls for change and an end to racial prejudice. House Democrats have proposed a sweeping package of changes in police oversight and accountability. House Committee Chairman Gerald Nadler explained at least part of the bill.
Among other things, the bill would make it easier for the federal government to successfully prosecute police misconduct cases. It would ban chokeholds. It would end racial and religious profiling. It would encourage prosecutions in the federal government to successfully prosecute police misconduct cases. It would ban chokeholds. It would end racial and religious profiling. It would encourage prosecutions independent from local police, and it would eliminate the dubious court-made doctrine of qualified immunity for law enforcement.
Family members, politicians, and celebrities mourn George Floyd at his funeral in Houston Tuesday. The death has prompted protests around the United States as well as many other countries. Mike O'Sullivan reports.
A private ceremony with hundreds of people inside the Houston church and many more along the route to the cemetery. The funeral service was broadcast on all major U.S. networks. The presumptive Democratic presidential nominee joined via video.
We cannot leave this moment thinking we can once again turn away from racism that stings at our very soul.
Houston police officers saluted as the casket entered the church. Four officers in Minneapolis faced charges in Floyd's death, one of them charged with murder.
Until the law is upheld and people know they will go to jail, they're going to keep doing it because they're protected by wickedness in high places.
A Houston police official called this a watershed moment.
And I really believe that there's a great hope here in this city, and that hope is spreading nationwide.
This was the third memorial in states where George Floyd had lived, Minnesota, North Carolina, and Texas. Monday, thousands came for a public viewing of the body in Houston. Tuesday, his family grieved.
I want justice for my brother, my big brother. Everybody gonna remember him.
And grapple with questions raised by his death. Mike O'Sullivan, VOA News, Los Angeles.
We invite you to read more on our top story by following our Twitter stream at VOA Asia. We're also on Facebook, VOA Asia, and the voanews.com website. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now at voanews.com. The World Health Organization is urging Pakistan to impose a new round of lockdowns as the number of new coronavirus infections there has soared over the past few days. Disaster response officials in India say a huge fire broke out Tuesday at an oil well that has been known to be leaking gas for more than 2 weeks in Assam state. Indian government officials say Indian and Chinese military commanders made progress in talks Wednesday to defuse a standoff along their disputed border in the Western Himalayas. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia and on the voanews.com website. The Black Lives Matter protests that have erupted in the United States have increased pressure on Joe Biden, the Democratic presidential nominee, to pick a black running mate, while Biden has already promised to name a woman as his vice presidential nominee. VOA's Brian Patton reports the changing political landscape has raised the prospects for some female African-American leaders that had not been considered top contenders.
The nationwide racial injustice protests, some believe inflamed by President Donald Trump calling for the military to quell civil unrest, have spurred calls for Joe Biden to pick an African-American woman as his vice presidential running mate.
He has to actually have something to offer black voters, and it can't just be that Donald Trump is a mess of terrible. It has to be something more substantial than that.
The Democratic presidential nominee has pledged to pick a highly qualified woman as vice president. The growing need to address racial tensions and energize black supporters has focused attention on California Senator Kamala Harris, a daughter of Indian and Jamaican immigrants who lost to Biden in the Democratic primaries. Harris has become a leading contender. Meanwhile, the prospects for Minnesota Senator Amy Klobuchar, another presidential nomination rival, have seemingly faded over criticism that as a past prosecutor in Minnesota, she did not vigorously pursue police brutality cases. Atlanta, Georgia Mayor Keisha Lance Bottoms, who was considered a long shot, has gained national prominence after she gave a fiery speech on riots in her city and dismissing police officers for alleged excessive use of force during a protest.
We understand that our officers are working very long hours under an enormous amount of stress. But we also understand that the use of excessive force is never acceptable.
There is also increased talk about Florida Congresswoman Val Demings, who was one of the managers of the impeachment proceedings against President Trump. But she has also come under criticism for her past role as police chief of Orlando. Former Georgia state lawmaker Stacey Abrams, who lost a close race for governor in the strongly Republican state, and former National Security Advisor Susan Rice are also possibilities. Criticisms of Abrams by some is her lack of experience in a statewide elected office, such as governor or senator.
I want to push back on that because it is something when we define qualifications in a certain way, it tends to just kind of perpetuate the inequalities we see.
While some white women Democrats, such as Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren and Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer may have more experience, analysts say the resurgence of the Black Lives Matter movement may make choosing an African-American vice presidential candidate a political and moral imperative. Brian Patton, VOA News, Washington.
Happening now in Asia, Singapore replaces the United States as India's biggest overseas market for engineering parts in April, with exports rising 95% to $553 million from a year earlier. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We are happy you're with us on VOA Asia. In the United States, more than a dozen states have recorded their highest number of COVID-19 cases this week, with many concentrated across the western and southwestern states of Arizona, New Mexico, Texas, and Utah. The increases come amid a loosening of coronavirus restrictions in recent weeks, including the annual Memorial Day holiday that signals the start of the traditional summer vacation season. Infectious disease expert Dr. Anthony Fauci has described COVID-19 as his worst nightmare, saying the disease spread around the world with surprising speed after emerging from China in December. Associated Press correspondent Tim McGuire has more on that.
One of the nation's top doctors says people have to remain cautious because even with stores, restaurants, and businesses reopening, the coronavirus is still out there. Dr. Anthony Fauci, the government's top infectious disease expert, tells ABC's Good Morning America that reopening doesn't mean going back to the way things were before the pandemic.
When you open, that doesn't mean that everything is okay and you just can just do whatever you want. You still have to practice a degree of caution.
Fauci adds that researchers seem to be making progress on finding a vaccine.
If we are in good shape and that happens, we could have a vaccine either by the end of this calendar year or in the first few months of 2021.
He also says the World Health Organization realized it was wrong and had to back off in saying asymptomatic spread of the coronavirus is rare. I'm Tim McGuire.
After you listen to VOA Asia, see it. VOA Asia is on YouTube. See and share the fun with Food Bites, our weekly culinary dive into foods from the homeland. Recipes that came with chefs who immigrated to the United States. Students enrolling in U.S. schools can get their first lessons about life on campus. Subscribe for free and see us often on VOA Asia YouTube.
This news now from VOA Asia. Indonesia reported Wednesday its biggest daily increase in COVID-19 cases for a second consecutive day, with 1,241 new infections, taking its total to 34,316. All of the big stories come your way throughout the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. This is Business Scene. I'm Ira Melman. In a secluded patch of forest on Bangkok's outskirts, Thai American Daboy Way is shooting Baby You. Bonfires and dancers illustrate verses being cast under a spell of a track from his new album that will be Def Jam's first major Southeast Asian test. A pioneer of Thailand's rap scene, Daboy Way raps in both Thai and English in a nod to his U.S. background. The 39-year-old, who now has 1 million Instagram followers, remembers the early struggles of a genre that rubbed against Thailand's conservative norms, where fans had to be prodded into letting go at concerts. Fast forward to 2018, and popular Thai talent show The Rapper racked up tens of millions of views on YouTube in its first season. That same year, a collective of underground artists known as RAD, or Rap Against Dictatorship, released searing verses criticizing the country's military that drew well over 60 million views on YouTube.
As of right now, not including Southeast Asia, Thailand's rap is growing exponentially, and lots of Thais are trying to get into rap, and right now we've got an idol, who's Daboy Way, because he's opened a market for us Thais. He's able to show us that if you're serious about rapping, you'll be able to go international.
Hip-hop became the second most popular genre after pop on Jukes in Thailand late last year. In a city with thousands of nail salons, Jenny Boyes has managed to carve out a niche. People come from all over to have their acrylic nails done by the Queen of Bling, who has turned nail art into jewelry. It's a far cry from the zen, trendy salons all over Manhattan. Visitors pass through an unremarkable door at a Bronx shopping district and then climb a steep staircase to reach Jenny's spa. Cardi B was relatively unknown in 2012 when she found Bui. At the time, Bui, a Cambodian refugee, only had a small salon in Harlem.
First time she come, I don't have time to do her nail, and she come second time. And second time I come, and she come, and then she say, oh, tell my husband I want Jenny to do my nail. And my husband say, oh, I have to ask her if she have appointment, because that time I'm very busy.
Fans come from all over the United States ready to pay hundreds of dollars for similarly flashy, glitter-covered nails that will last them 4 to 6 weeks.
It's not like going to a normal salon. It's like when you do your hair for something special or your makeup for something special. That's how I feel these kind of nails.
Cardi B helped me a lot for my business. She is loyal and humble. She never forgets who helped her from the beginning, said Bui. For Business Scene, I'm Ira Melman.
A message from your friends at VOA Asia. Wash your hands with soap and water before you eat, after using the toilet, after touching anything many other people touch, like a seat on a public bus. scrub thoroughly for 20 seconds. If you cannot wash your hands, use a hand sanitizer. Taking these steps can prevent not only coronavirus, but also colds and flu and other viruses. A message from your friends at VOA Asia.
Hong Kong police arrested 53 people during Tuesday's rally to mark the one-year anniversary since that city's pro-democracy protests began. Reuters' Libby Hogan has more.
Hundreds of activists gathered in the heart of the city, shining lights and chanting Free Hong Kong, before police fired pepper pellets and pepper spray to break up crowds. Police say people were arrested for offences, including unlawful assembly and participating in unauthorised assembly. Protesters young and old marched together in defiance of social distancing limits that ban gatherings of more than eight people. 78-year-old George Lam was one of them.
We are committed to protecting our homeland and our future generations. We should cherish every step while we still have the chance to go on to the street. We should not step back until the end.
Beijing recently passed a motion to introduce a new national security bill for the city last month that prohibits sedition, subversion of state power, foreign interference and terrorism. Demonstrators fear it will dramatically stifle freedom in Hong Kong. Security Secretary John Lee told the South China Morning Post on Wednesday that local police were setting up a dedicated unit to enforce the law. He also said they would have intelligence gathering, investigation and training capabilities. Last year, Hong Kong's pro-democracy protests were sparked by a government bill that would have allowed people to be extradited to mainland China for trial, where the courts are controlled by the Communist Party. That bill was withdrawn after months of protests that at times veered into violence. Details of the security law or how it will work have not yet been revealed, but it's been given the nod from banking giants HSBC and Standard Chartered. That sparked criticism from investors, and US Secretary of State Mike Pompeo singled out HSBC on Tuesday, saying such, quote, corporate kowtows got little in return from what he called the Chinese Communist Party's cohesive bullying tactics. More protests in Hong Kong are planned in coming days.
That was Reuters reporter Libby Hogan. Thank you for joining us. This is VOA Asia. UN experts say the COVID-19 pandemic is worsening widespread food shortages and malnutrition in North Korea, causing more hunger and ill health. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The humanitarian situation and nutritional status of millions of people in North Korea was bleak before the outbreak of the coronavirus pandemic. The World Food Program says more than 10 million people, or nearly 40% of the population, are in need of humanitarian aid. WFP spokeswoman Elizabeth Beer says even more people have no access to health, clean water, sanitation, and hygiene services.
There are also 1.7 million children under five who are also living under the threat of recurrent natural disasters and now the global COVID-19 pandemic. Malnutrition has been persistent and widespread, causing long-term damage to the health and development of children, as well as pregnant and nursing mothers.
Beer says nearly 1 in 10 children under 5 is underweight and 1 in 5 is stunted. She notes malnutrition on that scale will cause irreversible damage to hundreds of thousands of children. The World Food Program warns preventive measures such as quarantine also may make it difficult for vulnerable people to get the health care and nutritious food they need to stay healthy. The North Korean government of Kim Jong-un has not officially confirmed any cases of coronavirus. However, in late January, North Korea closed its border with China, essentially ending trade between the two countries. UN Special Rapporteur on the Situation of Human Rights in North Korea, Thomas Ojeda Quintana, says the action has exacerbated the food crisis and deepened economic hardships facing North Koreans. He says an increasing number of families eat only twice a day, and some are starving. Even soldiers, he says, reportedly are suffering from food shortages. But he expresses particular concern about thousands of people in secretive political prison camps. He says many reportedly are dying because of hard work and lack of food, contagious diseases, and overcrowding. The UN investigator is calling for the immediate release of prisoners with vulnerable conditions who are at particular risk of infection and death from COVID-19. Quintana also is urging the UN Security Council to consider lifting sanctions imposed over Pyongyang's nuclear and missile programs. He says the sanctions are having a crushing impact on the livelihoods of people and the ability of the government to respond to their needs. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Meanwhile, in the latest blow for inter-Korean cooperation, North Korea threatens to permanently shut a liaison office with South Korea as it continues to condemn its rival for failing to prevent activists from sending anti-North Korean leaflets across the border. We welcome to VOA Asia, VOA Seoul correspondent Bill Gallo. North Korea and South Korea seem to be going in the wrong direction. How did we get to this point?
Well, it has sort of been back and forth for a long time with North Korean and South Korean relations, to state the obvious, perhaps. But where we've been recently is that in 2018, the two sides came to a series of agreements to try to improve relations, expand economic engagement, things like that. The two leaders of North and South Korea met three separate times in 2018, and there was a great sense of optimism. This kind of coincided with the separate nuclear talks with the United States. And whenever those nuclear talks between North Korea and the United States broke down, that is when you started to see inter-Korean relations also falter. The reason for that is, in order to move ahead with many of these inter-Korean agreements that had been actually agreed to, the sanctions needed to be removed, which are on North Korea. And that can't be done, in the U.S. mind, without some progress on the nuclear talks. So that's sort of the context for where we are today.
So where does it go from here?
Well, North Korea announced this week that they would cut all communications lines with South Korea. Now, what that is, those are mainly lines of official dialogue between the North and the South. And there are many, many ways that they have talked to each other. It's not clear whether they have all been severed at this point, but it seems clear that North Korea is sort of elevating this crisis unilaterally, because what South Korea has done is make every effort to say, no, this is not what we want. We want to continue talking to you. And even the stated reason that North Korea has given for cutting off this dialogue and for worsening relations with South Korea, the stated reason is that South Korean activists sometimes float leaflets across the border that are anti-North Korea. This has happened for years. Why did North Korea get upset now? We don't really know, but that's at least sort of the pretense, I think, that's being used for North Korea to get mad. South Korea has responded by saying, no, we'll stop that. We'll make every effort possible to stop these leaflet launches. That hasn't really kept North Korea from getting very angry. And they seem to just sort of be insistent on making this a big deal right now.
Is this aimed at the United States as well as the South, or just the United States?
Well, I mean, I think it's both. I think that North Korea would like the South to give some concessions as it relates to economic engagement and things that would benefit it financially in terms of inter-Korean economic cooperation and things like that. But it's pretty clear also that part of the strategy here is that North Korea is indirectly pressuring Washington via Seoul. They think that perhaps the South Korean government, which is a progressive government, which wants dialogue desperately, will be able to pressure the United States to be able to make some concession in nuclear talks. However, Donald Trump doesn't seem to be prioritizing nuclear talks with North Korea right now, so it doesn't really seem like there will be any movement on the U.S.-North Korea front.
Bill Gallo is the correspondent for VOA in Seoul, South Korea. Bill, thanks so much for being with us. You've been listening to VOA Asia. Like us on Facebook, VOA Asia. Follow us on Twitter at VOA Asia. You can find us on Instagram and YouTube and at voanews.com. VOA Asia team includes Doug Bernard, Keith Lane, Amy Poopaboon, and Jim Stevenson. I'm Ira Milman in Washington. Stay safe and enjoy your day.